there's a collective psychological effect going on in our country.
We also have QAnon politicians.
People who are recruited are individuals who are easily open to suggestion.
In doomsday cults, it's an apocalypse that never happens, and in political cults, it's a revolution that never happens.
Are not the terrorists that I'm concerned about, because the terrorists that I'm concerned about, you know, have badges.
In this country, we don't want critical thinkers, we want consumers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Revolution Radio's special reports. I am your host, Brian Powers, and I'm here to bring you something I think is pretty timely and a look into the past few months and all this stuff from the two most important views, I think, as we talk about like QAnon and stuff in this wider world, in my own kind of personal organizing and in my own experience. I'm like, I was kind of shocked at how shocked people were. Political cults are not something new, and anybody who's studied politics and things like that should understand that this has been a part of political history since political history started. So when I thought of political cults and my personal experiences with people on the fringes of some of these weird groups, as well as the history that I've studied, I think of the two dominant aspects as the politics and their engagement in the power structures that run societies, from the cults that murdered Roman and Greek emperors to the cults today, like we're going to talk about the Rushites and others who have actually infiltrated and have put people into modern politics. So you have that political angle, but you also have that very important psychological angle. And you have to understand, and I think what we've really been trying to understand as a nation, as we've come to be aware once again of the force of what a political cult can do, you know, we also want to know, how did it happen? How do you progress from somebody who's not in a cult to somebody who is in a cult? And I think probably most importantly, how do you get people out of these cults when they are in them, which is way more difficult than anybody could ever imagine. And I've done some studying on this from Jim Jones, which I get into, which is one of the most bizarre cases of human being you could ever study in your life, you know, to this QAnon conspiracy theory that we've seen blamed for the attacks on the Capitol. I'm going to bring in Dr. Letitia Sampson from Great Joy Counseling. Dr. Sampson did a special episode with us once before on mental health and activism. I feel like this is a bit of a continuation of that, Dr. Sampson. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, so glad to see you again, Brian, and so glad to be on the show again. I mean, you know, I really love this platform because I think that these issues are attacked in a real way. So yeah, I'm so excited to be here, and I agree with you. I think this is a continuation of our conversation, because I want to be able to talk about the psychology, what psychological profile an individual has to have in order to be influenced by these cults, by these groups. So I'm excited to talk about that tonight.
It's so nice to have you as a comrade of Revolution Radio, because it's hard to find experts in these things. One, a lot of experts are in short order right now, a lot of media attention to these issues. So I really do appreciate you bringing your skills. And I think it's important our audience understands, you know, your work. You're a doctor of psychology, right? And also a certified social worker. Tell us about your background and kind of the path your career is on.
Absolutely. So I'm actually I like to say I'm a jack of all trades as it relates to human services. So I'm a professor, I'm an activist. That's actually how you and I met, during a protest here in New Jersey. I, have been a proud owner of a mental health agency since 2014 here in New Jersey. And, I've really spent my life educating people about the importance of mental health, emotional wellness. And I think that we can't leave that out of the conversation, specifically when we're speaking about issues like this, right? Like, it's so easy to kind of not think about what causes people to do what they do. So I love to use my voice in that way.
And I'm going to bring in our other panelist, the participant in tonight's discussion, Christian Perez, who Revolution Radioers know Christian Perez. He hosts NJR Live once a month, and he's going to do so next week. He also does a podcast called Modernity and Absurdity. I got that backwards. Modernity and Absurdity. So I call him the professor because he is, in fact, a professor of political science. He's also done some deep dives into conspiracy theories. And Christian, since it's a special occasion and we've got some new viewers, and now we're not New Jersey Revolution Radio anymore. We are Revolution Radio, and we're going coast to coast. So
going national.
Yeah. What did I miss on your, of course, huge and very impressive resume?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. So I teach political science in New Jersey with a focus, or my main interest is studying conspiracy theories. I've been asked to speak at a couple conferences. I'm a regular contributor to New Jersey Revolution Radio. And with Brian, I'm one of the co-hosts of the Idavox Report, and the main host, of course, being Daryl Lamont Jenkins. So for New Jersey Revolution Radio fans, you're going to get me Monday, tonight, tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday night also. I'm all week.
Yeah, and it's important to note our sponsors include our Revolution Radio editorial board, which you can become a member of. Our editorial board chips in a few bucks every month. They meet, they give us show ideas, they editorialize, they produce segments and all kinds of things. So we have really, really expanded under Revolution Radio, and they're sponsoring us, as well as the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey. And just because I live in another state doesn't mean I'm not going to come visit my family. I mean, I come from North Jersey and with a bunch of Polish people, they're not going to let me get away with not coming to visit every once in a while. So I'm going to be down there and make sure we do a show. And I stop in at the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey, as well as Great Joy Counseling, Dr. Samson Business there in Clark, New Jersey. But she does all kinds of services. So please go check out her website and take a look, as she said. And I believe she also has a skincare line out now, too. But we'll get to that more in the commercial segment. Right now, I want to dive in a little bit. And Dr. Samson, like I said, in our last conversation, we talked about like the mental health conditions activists are under, and that they're subject to by putting themselves in the role of an activist. But today we're kind of taking a look at these organizations that in kind of, I think, start out by hunting people who are vulnerable or who are susceptible. So I guess my first question to you is, who is susceptible, and who do you think, if I'm a cult leader and I want to start a cult, who do I go out in the world looking for to recruit into these organizations?
I think it's important to know that the people who are recruited are individuals who are easily open to suggestion. And I don't want to make it seem as though these people are patsies or they are somehow different than the rest of us, because I think that the right person could really, with the right amount of time and the right set of circumstances, influence anyone to do anything. But the reality is they look for individuals who are passionate about certain aspects of life, people who, really get on their soapbox, and they're able to desensitize these people and find what they feel they have in common. And usually when that happens, people let their guards down. And that is like, really, it sets the stage for individuals to be influenced to do things that they otherwise may have never thought to do on their own. The reality is, Brian, that most people want to be part of something, and they don't immediately think that what they're doing is wrong or damaging or detrimental, right? The people that are influencing them are narcissists. They have borderline personality types, and they're individuals who are very passionate. They're individuals that people want to be around. They're very charming. And so, when you may be an individual who has some type of emotional wounds or insecurities, it's very easy to feel susceptible to that influence and to want to be liked or loved or welcomed, right? We all have that want to feel a sense of belonging. And I think that we have to tune into that in order to really understand the profile of people who do some of the things that they do, especially with what happened in our nation around the election.
I think one of the common misconceptions out there is that that people involved in these things are stupid. And nothing, honestly, like I can think of a couple of examples in my personal life, not that they're into cults, but they've become serious Trumpers to the point of where it's like, it is kind of like they're not connected to the same consensus reality that the rest of us are.
Yeah.
But they're not, they're doctors. They've got important jobs. I won't mention who, because I won't call them and on my family members or close friends up by name, but they're not stupid. It's it's, and what you're saying is that, you know, there's something missing. And I guess that's what I could ask Christian is, you know, what are the characteristics of a cult? Because what I'd like to get out of these two questions is how does this person fit into this organization? So Christian, can you tell us a little bit about the characteristics of what is a cult?
So I mean, we had a working definition earlier. You put it up earlier. So a system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. So piggybacking on what Letitia said earlier, we're usually talking about a certain set of ideas or a charismatic figure. If we're looking at political cults historically, right, to put them in their historical context, Roman emperors had political cults. The personality cults of the 20th century, whether it be Joseph Stalin or Mao Zedong or Adolf Hitler, they all had cults around them. But just again, to piggyback on what Letitia said, we're talking about what makes them a political cult is it's not just that there's a charismatic leader. It's not just that there's a certain set of ideas that they're following. It's the fact that, well, what we want to also add is this idea of a whole propaganda component, right? So with religious cults or new age cults or wellness cults, there's usually a book you can buy, a website you can go to, a belief system you could adhere to. With political cults, there's another step. It's do we get involved in party politics? Do we support certain political individuals? So for instance, whether it's the Revolutionary Communist Party, I mean, I wouldn't call them a full-on cult. All these organizations, it's like a Venn diagram. They show certain characteristics. They're not all the same. But with them, they are specifically created to engage in politics. They are a political party. They want to influence politics. They want to, in many ways, be a part of government. Unfortunately, with them, they're a little bit out of touch. With any organization, or should I say, with cults nowadays, the kind of cults we're talking about, there's usually an aspect of taking people away from their families. Like Letitia said, somebody's missing something in their life. So whether it's the Ku Klux Klan, whether it's ISIS, whether it's, you know, one of these weird sex cults, there's always a part where it's, I find somebody who's vulnerable. I try to isolate them. I try to surround them with propaganda, and that's going to bring them into my fold. You know, some, like I said, some are religious, some are sexual cults, some are based around wellness, like, you know, new age cults. But in this instance, there's, you know, cults that are based around political ideas or political actors, individuals.
The tools that seem to be used, and you touched on, you know, sex cults and these different, the tools that seem to be used are very similar, even with political cults, you know, and
Jimmy. I'm sorry. Jimmy's talking about Bob Avakian. We're getting to Bob Avakian.
Because Bob's kind of cult light is what I'd like to describe, you know, RCP as. So
yeah.
I want to get it. But let's start off with something way more like, first off, well known and kind of an extreme example, only to show kind of where this thought can lead. And that would be the example of the People's Temple and Jim Jones. I did listen to a podcast, and I suggest, you know, I got some of these ideas out of this podcast. So it's called Cults. It's simple. It's on Spotify and stuff. And there's a two-part episode on Jim Jones, which I have to recommend and give credit to here. In the example set by Jim Jones, this guy basically organized this cult his whole life. And there were warning signs very early. Like, he was preaching in his barn to animals to start off with, and was wearing robes at a very young age. And then as a young preacher in San Francisco, he was selling monkeys. Like, you would walk down the street, maybe get some chorizo or a hot dog or some postcards. He was selling live monkeys that he had imported from Malaysia or something. He had trained a monkey to attack people okay, by a secret signal. So you wouldn't know that Jim Jones had trained his monkey to attack you. But if you said something that he didn't like on the street, his monkey would attack you. Nobody noticed that this guy was a little off.
Yeah.
Dr. Samson, it's probably not so obvious as somebody training a monkey to attack people on the street. But, I mean, what are the warning signs that somebody may be going downhill, specifically into an organization that is not going, is basically preying upon what is already some mental illness or some underlying issues there?
I mean, I think that we have to look at, you know, the personality types really closely, right? We have to look at what the responses are when individuals don't get their way, right? So you have people who lead various organizations, and to be quite honest, one thing I say is, in order to lead some of these powerful, whether they be political or corporate organizations, you have to have a bit of personality disorder going on anyway, just in order to be able to see some of the things you see and do some of the things you have to do. And I think that that's something that we don't really talk about, because we tout some of these same personality types as what makes a person successful, right? So we look at, you know, individuals' ability to influence other people, individuals' ability to get people to follow them or to really be strategic and to really winner takes all, right? Like, we celebrate these same behaviors when people get into the corporate world. And, you know, we live in a capitalist society. So, hey, this CEO is now a multi-billionaire. They're great. Well, guess what? Those same skills are the same skills that these cult leaders have, that the same mentality, you know, I'm right, everyone is wrong, and I'm going to have what I want. It doesn't matter who falls, and it doesn't matter who needs to be influenced. And so I think that as a society, we have to look at what we celebrate, because in other cultures, you know, people like Christian and I are celebrated, right? If you're a teacher or you're a person, a lawyer or something like that, like, you're touted. But in America, it's based on how much influence you have, how much money you have, what, you know, what C position, you know, you have, what C-suite you're in, or what your bottom line is. And we don't really see the other side of that until we have some of these emergencies in our country. And then everyone's like clutching their pearls, you know?
Yeah. We brought up, you know, and I know, you know, Bob Avakian and RCP are known as kind of a culty group. And so I try to avoid it, and in my personal life, and this is from some study into cult-like thinking and stuff, I try to avoid black and white thinking, because that's a sign of kind of a brainwashed mind. People are evil on the outside of the cult, and people are good on the inside of the cult, and you know everything, and the rest of the world is evil and trying to take from you. So there is this, there's an isolation that cult leaders put onto their followers that mm-hmm. allow them to kind of be their only source of knowledge. Chris, there's levels of it, right? So there's cults where they had full on communes and people were being abused and not allowed to leave the commune. But there's also cult like organizations where, you know, there's just this blind obedience to a certain leader, and there's maybe this undue level of either, you know, financial support or otherwise. Where do you start to see problems in organizations where they go from having either just a small following, or because it's perfectly fine to have something outside of thinking, you know, there's a destructive nature of the cult. Where do you start to see a group as having a destructive nature, I guess,
is what? Well, number one is, what kind of propaganda are they putting out? Like, what are they basing themselves around? Is it around an abusive ideology? Is it around something authoritarian? Is it an obvious grift or money grab? Because for me, a lot of these cults just look like that. For me, it's, what kind of propaganda are they doing, and how do they react to naysayers? How do they react to critics? Is it violently? Do they get defensive? Are they engaging? You know, is there a lot of cognitive dissonance, right? A lot of cults, the reason we call them cults is because they're outside of the norm, right? You can have a religion, right? But religions don't necessarily always pull people away. They have places of worship. They want people to engage, but it's not necessarily about that isolation. So for me, it was, you know, are they trying to isolate people? What type of propaganda are they putting out? Because, you know, propaganda can be good. You know, Sesame Street is propaganda, right? So some propaganda can be good. But, like, again, like, what are they pushing, and how do they react to critics? Because if you're telling me, like with the Cassiopeians, that, you know, you're using a Ouija board to communicate with people from the future that are telling you to support Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, that's a red flag for me. That's where I stop it. You know, and with an organization like the Revolutionary Communist Party, I could say, hey, they've done a lot of good work, right? A lot of left-wing cults, ultimately, there might be some positive aspects to them. But, you know, Bob Avakian was living in a basement until like the 90s, dude. Nobody's looking for you. The 60s are over. The Black Panthers are gone. You're not that threat to the status quo, especially as the 70s become the 80s and 90s. And now in 2021, it's, I think he kind of realized that he's not the threat he is. But again, if you go to their website, RCP, I think it's revcom.us, just type in Revolutionary Communist Party. It's all about adoring Bob Avakian and how great of a leader he is, right? The guy never led a revolution. The guy never held elected public office. You're a leader of a political party and you've been down for the cause since the 60s. Thank you. I've read a couple of your books, right? You got a couple of good books, but you know, at the end of the day, you have to get with reality. And you know, when they don't have a web presence outside their newspaper, party members don't engage on social media. So if you're trying to control information and communication, again, that's another red flag or warning sign.
You know, to answer my own question, is it's where the organization really just kind of departs from reality. And what I found when I got involved with, you know, and I call them all the time the potato heads. I make fun of them on my show and stuff. And because it's like this culty like organization, it's culty. It's a culty like part of an organization. So you can have like aspects of organizations that are toxic where you have other aspects of that. And I think of that as the same organization has really good activists feeding hungry people and protesting for Black Lives Matter. So there can be aspects of it. And reading in Bob Avakian's thing, I've seen this written about so many other kind of politicians by their supporters, including mainstream politicians like Bernie Sanders. And I'll tell you, I've met Bernie Sanders fans that are just as far off the charts as Trump.
People want heroes. Our country is starved for heroes. Like even Martin Luther King is not perfect. Everyone has their flaws, but we are so starved for heroes that we're willing to put anybody up on these pedestals and not really look at them for who they are in totality, right? I like Bernie Sanders. I consider myself a Bernie guy, right? But I don't put all my hope on him like he's going to save the world, right? I mean, like you can't do that for anybody. I mean, and you know, then that's part of the problem with the abuse on the left of Vanguard and democratic centralism is a component. Well, one of the problems with democratic centralism is it's a form of democracy, but it's meant to keep away factionalism. So in a sense, it becomes insular. So rather, it's basically like,
I can defend because
So the thing is, democratic centralism is one regime type among many other regime types in existence, and its weakness comes down to human error, right? So democratic centralism or our type of presidential politics or a parliamentary democracy are three different types of regime or three different types of government. The fault isn't necessarily in the type of government, it's who's running government, right? So if you have an authoritarian personality like a Stalin, right, who is enabled by people who aren't going to criticize him, who was radicalized many ways in the Orthodox Church, which is where he kind of developed his very hardline black or white thinking, and that, you know, that kind of structure just enabled him. And then on top of the fact that the Russians had never had democracy before, right? So it's a people that aren't ready for democracy. So, you know, it's easy for them to fall into totalitarianism.
What specifically are people when, I guess I wanted to dive a little more into the people that get roped in by that person. You said they're missing something. Are there childhood issues? Are there family issues that generally come into play? Is it something that just anybody's susceptible to? But are there conditions that lead to these kind of holes that you're talking about? You know,
Of course, I think that it goes into a lot of what Christian mentioned as well. I think a want to look up to someone, a want for someone to give that approval. And when you don't have that approval, which is constant in childhood, it can leave an emotional wound and a scar. So let's think about even, you know, and I don't want to go too deep here, but just follow me for a second. Let's think about grades in school. So, you know, when you think about industrialization, when formalized education in the United States came into being, grades were to tell, you know, foremen of various companies where to put people. So grade A people were able to be managers. Grade B people were able to work on the assembly line. Grade C were able to do maintenance. D, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what? When the industry left, the grades remained. And so parents and schools, you know, awards are given based on individuals' abilities to still be put into the boxes from, you know, 70 years ago. And we don't look at what we celebrate. And so if you have a person who may not have that formalized celebration, they want to clamor to that. You know, we have to know that there's a difference between, you know, celebrating and giving acceptance to people because of who they are, versus doing it based on what individuals can do. And our society looks at what people can do and rewards them based on that. And so anytime, you know, individuals don't feel a connection, they're going to seek that. And unfortunately, they are very susceptible to influence. You know, they don't look at it as, oh, hey, I'm doing something wrong, or I'm going too far with this. They look at it as, I'm able to be connected. These people understand me, they welcome me, and they want me. And it's not only about what I can do, it's about who I am. So we have to really look closely at that piece.
Bob Avakian's website says, Bob Avakian is the architect of a whole new framework of human emancipation. The new synthesis of communism, which is popularly referred to as the new communism. Bob Avakian's been organizing for 40 or 50 years, okay? If he figured out an architect for the framework of human emancipation, please start to build that framework, Bob, because, you know, I mean, and I think for one human being to think that they alone have come up with a framework for human emancipation in and of itself is crazy. You know, yeah. I mean, that's not something one person's going to come up with. It's something that's going to, it's going to require a little more teamwork than that. I did want to take a break for just a minute, because I know that Dr. Leticia has more than just Great Joy Counseling. I did want to ask about her skincare line. Because before the show, I did, I just agreed. So this is our commercial break. I should play some music for the commercial.
Oh, thank you so much.
We did. I did want to ask about your skincare line, because I'm not sure you cater to, whether it's for female or whatever, but tell me about, it's Real Melanin Monroe, right?
Yes. Yep. Tell me about it. It's actually for all people. Obviously, as a woman, my primary audience is women, but everyone can use the products. You know, it's something that I decided to develop during COVID because I didn't want to completely lose my mind and not be creative because we couldn't do anything. So I said, you know what, let me just see something that I've always been interested in. And I decided to develop it. You know, I think the two businesses that I have are bridged in that, you know, we have to do whatever job we have to do to take care of ourselves inside and out. So for me, it was about bridging, you know, the emotional wellness with the physical wellness. So, yeah, it's coming. It's coming soon.
All right. Well, send me some. If anybody can use it, I don't know if I'm doing well. I went to Rite Aid and I picked this out of a bin.
No problem. You got it.
And it's still a little shiny, but I'm getting better. But I could use some products. Thank you. So make sure you take care of our sponsors. As you know, it's hard enough to build an independent media company as it is, but to find sponsors is a whole different ball of wax. So we really are grateful for Dr. Sampson and Great Joy Counseling, as well as the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey, which I mentioned at the beginning of the show. And the owner there, Mike, you got to at least like his Facebook page, because he's one of these business owners that likes to dress up characters, but he doesn't make his employees do it. He's a good dude. He's a good business owner. And rather than force some kid out there for, not enough money an hour, Mike goes out there himself in that shake outfit, dressed up like a big coffee cake, dressed up like whatever, to bring in his new products. He's stayed open the whole time. He's been safe the whole time. He's a place that I've been visiting, even at the beginning of COVID when everybody was really scared. He was allowed to stay open. He did a great job. And he's been sponsoring Revolution Radio for well over a year. So please check out the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey. And our editorial board, the Revolution Radio editorial board, as I said, meets at least monthly. But if you get more involved, you meet weekly. Depends on what you want to do. Some people don't meet at all. They just send me an email about a show I should do every once in a while. But they financially support this station. They allow us to pay staff. They allow us to create media. I don't know if anybody knows this. We didn't make a big deal out of it because it was actually on the anniversary of Breonna Taylor's killing, and we didn't want to do a lot of promotions for ourselves that day because that was about saying her name and remembering her life. But we hit 1 million views. Revolution Radio has been clicked on and looked at over 1 million times, and we're really happy about that.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Isn't it cool? We did it in under 3 years. And as we've brought in the editorial board, I'm watching the numbers climb and climb and climb. And it's because more people are involved, more people are creating, you know, so I'm really happy about that. Check us out, www.njrevolutionradio.com. Again, that's www.nj, like new journalism, revolutionradio.com. And help us out with either a donation or join our Revolution Radio editorial board or whatever. Share our links, subscribe to our YouTube. There's lots of stuff you can do. Back to our conversation. And really, I think, you know, clearly the idea for this show stems from the QAnon thing, which we're a little removed from now. And I think the country is starting to breathe out from that deep breath in a little bit. I do feel like the nation... Donald Trump's not on Twitter anymore. He's not gaslighting the entire country with that nonsense. Although I do miss the laughs, I got to say, because that dude was ridiculous. But there's a collective psychological effect going on in our country. And I'm just wondering, I guess my first question to Dr. Sampson is, what happens when the cult leader goes away or when he's reduced in power like this? I did some study into a lot of cults, doomsday cults, and I've seen this on a lot of the left that a revolution is used in place of the apocalypse, by the way, in political cults. So it's a in. So what, and there's a number of cults where the cult comes up to the apocalypse day, they get together ready to die, and nothing happens. Nothing stays together. What goes through the mind of somebody that's roped into this fantasy, but then all of a sudden the fantasy starts to fall apart?
But see, here's the thing. So the fantasy doesn't fall apart in the minds of the cult members. The fantasy just changes. So it's the reason why you have some people in the South who still have the rhetoric, the South will rise again. They still believe, right, like all these centuries later, that we will go back to segregation and all of this, right? So it's important to know that what happens is mentally and emotionally, it just switches. So now it's, okay, how do we get back into power? How do we now, you know, centralize? How do we reorganize? How do we now topple? And quite honestly, that's where these figures become even more powerful, because they don't have to have that accountability, you know, of being in the mainstream anymore. So they can really go to the left, no pun intended, but they can really go to the left with some of these ideologies because they don't have to have that general accountability. So they really don't go away. They really don't go away. And it's important to know that.
Christian, what do you sense as far as on a mass scale, the psychological effect 2 months removed from Trump?
Well, I mean, like Dr. Trump, Sampson said, I mean, these people don't go away. They just kind of change. Right. So we had the Tea Party. The Tea Party became the Trumpers. The Trumpers are the QAnon types. Right. So Trump may have gone away, but these people will either find something else to latch on. There are still people in the QAnon grift still pushing it. There are leaders that rose up that try to, you know, gain some prominence. We have Congress people. We still have politicians in, you know, loosely affiliated that are still, you know, QAnon leaders. So they may have died down a little, but I don't see them going away, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene is not going to stop being crazy just because QAnon is no longer profitable. And it is still very, very profitable. So, you know, we might see them split up. We might see them morph into something else. You know, QAnon, one of the jokes about QAnon is they make all these claims and they don't come true, right? What happens is, and you see it in social media, there are the people that you know, they kind of realize they've been had and they go away. But again, as Dr. Sampson said, there are people that see it as a sign to be more of a true believer, right? That if you're walking away now, it's because you don't have faith, right? So, you know, all these claims may not have come true, but they're still, you know, they still will. You know, and then again with these people is there's a social aspect to it. You can speak all kinds of nonsense and all kinds of crazy stuff, but if you're in a bubble with like-minded individuals, you're going to find some community there. So again, these people aren't just going to pack up and go away.
From let me ask the doctor now. I'm not going to ask you as a doctor. I'm just going to ask you as a person, as a citizen of this country. Do you specifically fear the continued efforts of QAnon and these kind of racist elements of the right? Are you still, given what you just said, I'm thinking of the Jim Jones study that I did. He had a cult of about 3,000 people. Only 900 of them followed not even 900 total followed to South America. He lost, but his hardest and most ardent supporters followed him and ultimately committed mass suicide together. So it shows you the extreme level of people growth. So are you still afraid as a person that lives in this country of these elements continuing to organize and even becoming more dangerous, specifically the QAnon?
You know what? No, because quite honestly, you know, just being a Black person in the United States, it's a war every day. So these groups really are not the terrorists that I'm concerned about, because the terrorists that I'm concerned about, you know, have badges and guns and they're on the payroll and I pay taxes and support their salaries. So for me, you know, these other groups are on the fringes. It's the ones that are able to do, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, don't start none, don't beat none. You know, I don't go to the places where those people are, you know, I don't try to be in spaces to educate those people. Those are not people I want to appeal to on any levels. So my fears come from the individuals that, you know, I would call if my car was broken down on the side of the road.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a great perspective, because, and I even had a little, I'll be honest with you, one of my initial reactions, and there was a lot of effort to garner sympathy for Congress after what happened. A lot of people saying, look, they were on the floor of Congress, huddled together, scared for their lives. And, you know, the my natural cynical self, my first thought was, think about how the fucking Palestinian people have felt for the last 80 years that you've been sending bombs to. I mean, you're mad because some crazy racist people are in your house with a racist flag, you know, throwing some rocks and tear gas and maybe some of their arm. But we've been bombing the fuck out of this entire world, and they're the people responsible for it. And I did find it, and I thank you, you know, for bringing that up, you know, as an African-American. They've been terrorized in this country for 400 years. And, you know, there is a bit of that kind of, fuck these people. Now, that being said, I do think QAnon's dangerous, and I think they presented something of a racist power that I think we should all worry about. So getting getting back on to, you know, the subject at hand, as a society now, so rather than address, you know, QAnon in specific, but because, you know, these dark organizations exist, what can we do, you know, to stop the rise or to identify these groups? Either, you know, from an educational standpoint or a policy standpoint. Now leave that open. Who wants to answer that first?
I would say education, right? Education is key, building political networks. So, like, thankfully, well, I would say, like, the Revolutionary Communist Party, they're not a threat. Ultimately, they're a communist organization focused on identity politics and empowering people of color. They're weird, but I wouldn't consider them bad people. When it comes to like LaRoucheites who think that the British government is trying to assassinate presidents, then, you know, we're dealing with something else there. But, you know, I mean, they don't really have, they reached the pinnacle of their power years ago. The RCP, there's probably 300 to 500 of them, maybe, you know, across the country. With the Cassiopeians, they're too weird to ever actually have like political power. But for me, it starts with education. If people have a basic understanding of science, healthy skepticism, you know, understanding that, you know, one of the reasons we have to get flu shots every year is because they evolve, because evolution's real, right? You know, understanding that Moses was not a founding father and things like that. Basic civics, but like basic civics, basic. I love to teach Introduction to Political Science, Political Science 101. Right? Because people don't understand what governments are, what they do, what their responsibilities are. People don't know what basic political ideology is. And in this country, we don't want critical thinkers. We want consumers. And if that's the case, you know, if all you're taught to do is go for what you like best, then you could choose what reality you want to live in, whether it's white supremacist or bigoted towards immigrants or gay people. Or in this case, you know, you want to join a political cult that, you know, your guru uses a Ouija board to talk to aliens. This is, I mean, it's when you have consumers and not critical thinkers, people are going to blindly follow. And that's where we're at today. So hopefully with education, we can combat this.
Absolutely. I mean, Christian, there's not, you can't follow that up.
Try.
You can't. You said it all. America used to be a place where critical thinking was encouraged. Where finding out something for yourself and being curious and skeptical was celebrated. And that went away. And the more capitalist we became, the more that went away. And so it's just do what we tell you, and you get to live in whatever bubble you want, as he mentioned. And people are comfortable in their bubble, whether their bubble is social media, whether their bubble is a political party, whether their bubble is some racist activities or some religious overzealous activities. It doesn't matter. It's the bubble, and people want that comfort. They want that safety zone.
Are there specific, I mean, I could go over the education system and the culture of America and how it attributes to this larger problem. I think of racism and violence, kind of, which racism is, you know, but I think of our praise of violence as a big problem, that we see violence as a solution. There's a guy called Todd Snyder is a really great folk singer. And he has a line in a song that says, in America, we like our bad guys dead, you know? And so the idea that we could violently solve our solutions, and that's how we, you know, get pulled into these darker thoughts and these dark organizations. Do you see, when you say about education, how and when do we teach people that either violence isn't a solution, or that these kind of darker, that human beings need to be positive by nature in order to accomplish things? Where and when do we start teaching that, and how? That's an easy question, right?
I think that starts very, very, very early. It's one of the things that I'm working on is to build a daycare facility that really starts to teach emotional and mental health and emotional intelligence to babies and toddlers, right? Because most of this is not learned until middle school. And by then, right, you've been completely desensitized about these issues. Like, it's okay to behave this way by the time you're in the third grade. So guess what? We have to start even earlier and go into literal, you know, newborns, toddlers, and go there, because we kind of scoff. You know, I think about my family. They really all attacked me, but I didn't allow my daughter to watch television until she was 10 years old. Like, it was not allowed. You know why? Because young people can't decipher between what's real and what's not. And nobody agreed with me. But guess what? Like, she's able to be this gifted, you know, person who has her own imagination, her own mind, because of my willingness to make that hard choice. So I think that it starts with us in our own households. What are we really teaching? Or who are we allowing to raise our children? Are we having certain conversations around the dinner table? Are we comfortable? You know, young people need to be able to be listening to shows like this, right? Like, are these things encouraged? Parents sometimes drop the ball and kids are on TikTok 8 hours a day. Well, they're consuming all of these other things and being influenced, you know, unknowingly. So I think that once we really start at home with our own children and our own selves, we'll start to slowly see things change.
I mean, just, you can, well, the first easiest place to go, I always tell people, it's kind of like a snarky comment online, and I see you, Jimmy, by the way, is, you know, take a class at the community college. Right. Take a biology class, take a physics class, take a political science class. Right. It begins with education. If you read something on the internet that comes across as dubious, try to find somebody that's knowledgeable in that area. Do you have a friend with a degree in a related area? In terms of institutions, I mean, there are a number of skeptical societies. There are a number of progressive organizations. There's mental health counseling like Dr. Samson does. So there are institutions that are trying to fight ignorance, that are trying to fight misinformation. And, you know, they're not always working hand in hand together with a guided, unified purpose. But it's a bunch of different people, organizations, institutions fighting the battle on different fronts. And in terms of Jimmy, I mean, misinformation is the whole thing, right? Misinformation is is what's guiding all this. If you, again, if you don't understand history, if you don't understand politics, if you don't understand basic, you know, middle school science, people think the earth is flat, then you could be misled to believe anything, right? Mm-hmm. If you are not a critical thinker, misinformation is a weapon that can be used against you. Misinformation is the biggest tool of the bigot. It is the biggest tool of the conspiracy theorist and the megalomaniac, right? It's lies, it's misinformation that they use to feed their own ego. Dr. Samson said before, these people are incredibly egotistical, right? You have to be to kind of have all that attention on you all the time.
When we talk about misinformation, the general thing we think of is social media today. And what do you think the impact has been psychologically on people who are getting their politics from social media so much, Dr. Samson?
I mean, I think, unfortunately, you have individuals touting, you know, this misinformation all day, all night. I mean, and it's just crazy, and it's just shared, and groups are created, and it just continues to spread. I mean, there are individuals who think if they see it on the news, that it's true, whether the news is Fox News or CNN, right? Like, it doesn't matter what side you fall on. People really, you know, don't usually watch the opposing view. They watch what makes them feel good. They watch what, you know, ideology or perspective, you know, really connects with their values and their beliefs. And so I think that, you know, we have to go back to what social media was created for, and that was to bring people together and to be able to connect. And we have to get back to that versus using this as like a vehicle to falsely spread lies and misinformation, because it's just confusing to people, and it just continues to, you know, erode our society.
Yeah. From a personal perspective, I've been really, really concerned with the discussion about censorship and everything, not only because I run this, you know, business online and use streaming services that are dominated by billionaires, but from my personal standpoint, I've been on Facebook for about 11 or 12 years. There are relationships I've had for a very, very long time solely with somebody's Facebook icon, you know, and the idea that that kind of solely rests in one person's hands and at any moment can delete me and say, you're not allowed to use my platform. Quite frankly, I would shoot into a depression pretty hard and need some help pretty fast, because it's that big of a deal. And I think of that about that on a mass scale. Belisha, an editorial board member, brings up the real issues that they use, like human trafficking and stuff. And they always, you know, there's always a little bit of truth in a good lie. Yeah. So of course they're exploiting these things. But I wanted to ask, like, what do we do? You say we have to transform these platforms because they're not going to go away.
No.
So does the government need to step in and take over Facebook? Do we need to just fight harder to create more positive areas of social media? Donald Trump has already announced he's going to start his own Facebook platform. How do we fight that battle for a more positive international dialogue, if you will?
You know, I'll say this, and Christian, you definitely want to hear your voice here. I will say, I definitely don't think having the government take over is the answer, right? Like, we definitely don't need any more of their lies and false narratives either. You know, and I don't think that it's about getting rid of the platforms, but again, it starts with the education. I think that so many people really don't think that there is a lot to be said for the work that's done in your own home or in your own community. I think about, Brian, when you and I met, right? That protest had about 20 people, and by the time it was over, 4,000 people were there. We don't really think about the power that exists when you really start with one person. I think everybody thinks you have to start off with, you know, hitting 10 or 20 or 50 million people, and you don't. There's a lot of power in really working one-on-one with people, working with communities, working with organizations, and letting things spread from there.
Thanks. Christian, I know you're more of a policy guy. You're more into elections and stuff. On a macro scale, I mean, how do we manage the problem of social media disinformation?
For me, I think it would have to start with democratizing the leadership, not having an authoritarian, you know, corporate structure guiding social media, maybe a board of directors, people with degrees, people with social justice degrees, people with, you know, social science degrees. But I think that we could build relationships outside of social media. I think it plays a big part in our society. I don't think it's the only game in town. I mean, even if you look at Donald Trump, it hurt Trump a lot, but he still has a way to get himself out there. And if we're looking at local politics, you don't really always need social media. It'll help, but a phone call could work just as well. That being said, I mean, there's people that are more knowledgeable on the issue of how to deal with social media, breaking them apart. I don't think it should be in corporate hands. I don't think the problem is social media. I think the problem is corporate control of social media, this false equivalency of the right and the left that they will always devolve into. I don't know if I have like a simple answer for that. I think that that's something that we would need to explore. What role do they all play? Jimmy's saying they could be treated as public utilities. I mean, you could break up Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp, and I would definitely be in favor of that. But then again, is who do you put in charge of each organization, and what become their clearly defined goals? But I just wanted to comment on something. Belisha had a question, and it was about QAnon's effects in real life. It says, I wonder what QAnon or other ideologies like it have done to real issues that exist in real life, but have been twisted to fit its narrative. Well, I'll give you two examples. One would be the Wayfair. Wayfair is an online company. It's a store company. And some conspiracy theory came out that they were involved in human trafficking, right? So a lot of QAnon people called up organizations dedicated to end human trafficking, you know, clogging up the lines, getting in the way of people looking to do things about human trafficking and children being taken away. They're wasting time. They're clogging up the lines, looking for you know, monsters that don't exist. On another hand, we also have QAnon politicians or QAnon supporting politicians that have been elected to Congress. Every dollar, every second of time they waste chasing these mythical creatures, these satanic pedophiles, that's a dollar and that's a second wasted that could have gone towards something else, right? And I think I said it earlier, if you're looking for aliens, if you're looking for lizard people, if you're looking for the flat earth, you're not looking at who's really exploiting you. You're not looking at institutional or structural racism or xenophobia. If you're looking for aliens, you're not looking at racism. And these types, again, they just get in the way.
Some of the hardest parts of reading over some of the stories, and I did some research into smaller cults, was hearing from the family members and the people around the people who got sucked in, because really it's they lose them. It's described as just brainwashing. Essentially, somebody is taken away from you and changed into somebody else. Is that an accurate description of somebody in these more extreme cases as far as a clinical perspective goes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because again, these individuals have now completely untied the bonds they had with their former life and created stronger bonds with their new life. So they don't identify with their family in the same way. They may recognize who the people are, but the relationship no longer is connected. And so that's certainly painful for families. It's similar to individuals where they have a person that goes through dementia or something like that, where it's not the person you remember. And so that creates a lot of pain and a lot of disconnection for people. So sure, I think that's a great way to categorize it.
So the efforts to bring people out of cults are never, I mean, quite frankly, there's not a lot of success stories. And that's what I think was the worst part about it, was most of the stories that I looked into ended with, we gave up on them. They're gone. I don't have a daughter. I don't have a son. My husband, my wife, whoever it was, no longer exists, and now this person is in a cult, and that's their life now. And that's dead. So I don't know if there's any advice you could give to people out there who have seen themselves. And I also have heard stories of people that want to get out and don't know how. You know, maybe we could give some advice to those, and maybe somebody's listening tonight that's stuck in a situation in an organization with a group of people they don't want to be with, and they're starting to realize that they've made some bad decisions. How do they get out? How do they take that first step?
I think the first thing to do is to think about what the outcomes are. I think that we have to get away from what, you know, the bridges or the connector is, and really look at the outcomes. If you're out there and you're feeling disconnected, or you feel that the rhetoric that's being touted doesn't connect anymore with who you are, then it's time to move forward, because the things we're connected to should make you feel good. You should want to. When I think about the organizations I'm in, or if people ask me to be a part of something, I feel good about it. I don't question it, right? So if you are starting to question some of the ideology, that is enough to make you say, let me distance myself. And I think we have to really bring in that personal element of responsibility there and really reach out, whether it's to a hotline. You know, there are so many hotlines, whether it's to a friend, whether it is to social media, you know, to really know that you don't have to stay in a situation where you're being unduly influenced.
If some of the warning signs is if you're in the LaRoucheites or the LaRouche pack or whatever, and they're running around to DMVs with signs of Obama and a Hitler mustache and telling you that the King of England still wants to take your house. That was really their main organizing propaganda. Here it is for years. And so when people, you have to understand that when people in a cult see this, they think this is normal and accepted. They're not getting that they're so far out there. So
you want somebody that has ideological consistency, right? If somebody's jumping all over the political spectrum, that means they don't know what they're talking about.
Now, LaRouche, right? Is certainly that.
And that's a big part of it. Like I have a friend who got taken in by the Cassiopeians. And what I would tell people is look for the signs early, right? Mm. Do you have friends that are hurting? Do you have friends that are naturally inquisitive? Okay, these are the types of people that are going to get sucked. And when I talk about conspiracy theories, it's the same thing. People aren't stupid. These are people that are very much aware that something is up or off or wrong about the world, right? We need to find these people and we need to steer them into the right direction. Progressive organizations, democratic organizations, not Democratic Party, but organizations that promote democracy, not authoritarian organizations. Organizations that promote working with other groups, not shutting people away. You know, if you see friends that are showing the signs that they feel like they're lost or that they want to be a part of something, especially now during the pandemic, try to reach out and grab them, because as Brian said, it might be too late later on. And I have a friend and I honestly feel it's too late. I've had people come to me and say, we don't talk to him anymore. We're not friends with him anymore because he's not the same person he used to be. He's a different person now.
Yeah, it's tough. You have to take care of yourself. One of those things is heartbreaking because you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people, right? Yeah. Dr. Sampson, you're muted, so I didn't see you talking over there.
No, I'm just amening.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it. I want to hear that too. That's nice to hear while you're here. We only have a few minutes left before we got to get going here. So I do want to make sure we go around the room and we have some last minute thoughts. We definitely don't have to rush. So we'll start off with Dr. Sampson. If you have any more pearls of wisdom for us, we'd love to hear.
No, I just I'm so grateful for this platform. I think that these are the shows that definitely need to be brought to the forefront, where you're able to really talk about these issues and from a different perspective. So all I would say is to keep doing what you're doing, and anything I can do to support getting these messages out, I'll do.
Definitely. Well, we'll be in touch more and more. This is our second one, and I really think that mental health issues are never going to go away, especially while we have capitalism around. So we're going to work on that together. Christian, you're going to be, you're working every night this week.
I'm working every night. Tonight, yeah, tomorrow, right. Wednesday. I'm here every week. Every night. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 p.m. this week, you'll find me here, Revolution Radio. I might release a video tonight, Modernity and Absurdity, the YouTube channel, just for some unreleased notes here. Anybody wants to send me questions, find me at PerezPodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at Perez Podcast, or on Facebook. Just send me a message. I love communicating with people. I love talking to people. And this is how we fight ignorance, is by working together.
Support our sponsors, Great Joy Counseling, The Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey. And of course, go to www.njrevolutionradio.com. Join our editorial board. Make a donation. We always need more money. That money goes right into our staff. It goes into creating content. It goes into producing shows like this, the IDAVOX Report, which exposes white supremacy and hate, but also celebrates movies and art and all kinds of stuff. So every dollar counts. I mean, it's a little grassroots organization. It's just amazing how much $20-25 a month does for us. So if you can contribute that, please do. If you can contribute more, I'll take that too. So make sure you tune in. Our regular nights are Tuesday at 8 p.m. for the Idavox Report. Wednesday at 8 p.m. we do NJRR Live. This is Brian Powers. Thanks once again to my guest, Dr. Leticia Sampson, and the professor, Christian Perez. I will see you soon on Revolution Radio. Good night, everybody.
Good night.